Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update for June 25th. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And as you have heard, after 49 years, the 1973 landmark decision of Roe versus Wade was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. And that will return decisions on abortion laws back to the states. And we will get into a very deep legal discussion with our expert Jim Trusty coming up later on this morning and kind of get into the details of the decision, the justices and things. So we're going to save that for Jim. And I thought what we would do as we start off this morning is just present to you some of the sound from yesterday, from the president to the vice president to many of the members of Congress. Just to give you a sense of the tone, and you probably have heard some of this. Maybe you haven't heard too much of it, depending on what you were doing yesterday and last night. But just to kind of summarize what's been happening in the last 24 hours or so, protests across the country. The Supreme Court, right around 11 o'clock last night, the protesters dispersed there. And it was basically peaceful. There were some shouting matches, but no violence reported at the Supreme Court. There was vandalism reported at the Fox News studios in New York City. In Los Angeles, protesters blocked the 110. That's a key interstate in Los Angeles. They were also reportedly throwing objects at cars in Los Angeles. So that's a sense of the protests around the country. And I thought we'd start off with just a look at it from Jonathan Turley. Of course, you see him a lot on the Fox News channel, legal expert. And this is kind of how Jonathan Turley looked at it.
We have 13 or 14 states that already protect abortion. We have roughly the same number that is moving to limit it or ban it. This fight will occur in every single state. And that's what the Supreme Court, in many ways, agreed with President Biden. When President Biden said this is going to be on the ballot, that's what the court said. The court said, look, Roe interrupted our political debate. It interrupted this process for citizens to decide, state by state, where their values lie. And the court said, well, go at it, that this is up to you, not nine justices, but millions of Americans.
So that's a look at it from a legal perspective. And the president had a perspective, which was a political perspective. And for the president that was going to unify the country, it was anything but unifying yesterday. And we got just a sample of some of his comments from the White House yesterday.
Today, the Supreme Court of the United States expressly took away a constitutional right from the American people.
And he also continued talking about the law of the land.
A decision with broad national consensus that most Americans of faith and backgrounds found acceptable, that had been the law of the land for most of the lifetime of Americans today.
And then the president spoke of the health and life of women.
Now, with Roe gone, let's be very clear. The health and life of women in this nation are now at risk.
Now, the politics entered into it at the White House, and you will hear this theme from a number of different politicians, but the role of the former president.
It was three justices named by one president, Donald Trump, who were the core of today's decision to upend the scales of justice and eliminate a fundamental right for women in this country. Make no mistake, this decision is a culmination of a deliberate effort over decades to upset the balance of our law. The court literally taking America back 150 years.
So that's a sense of the tone of President Biden at the White House yesterday. And there was a lot more to it. And we're going to move over to Vice President Harris and her comments.
This is a health care crisis, because understand, millions of women in America will go to bed tonight without access access to the health care and reproductive care that they had this morning. Without access to the same health care or reproductive health care that their mothers and grandmothers had for 50 years.
Speaker Pelosi spoke at the House of Representatives yesterday.
What this means to women is such an insult. It's a slap in the face to women about using their own judgment to make their own decisions about their reproductive freedom. And again, it goes well. I always have said the termination of a pregnancy is just their opening act. It's just their front game. But behind it, and for years I have seen in this Congress opposition to any family planning, domestic or global. Because of Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, and the Republican Party, their supermajority in the Supreme Court, American women today have less freedom than their mothers.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez spoke yesterday as well in the House.
We're here today. Today is a very heavy day for so many of us across the country. Every single one of us has woken up today with less rights than we had yesterday. And pregnant people in particular are in more danger in the United States today than we were yesterday as a result of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade.
And you may have noticed the use of pregnant people as opposed to pregnant women. Well, that was the indoor sounds from yesterday, and Maxine Waters was outdoors among the protesters at the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday.
You ain't seen nothing yet. Women are going to control their bodies no matter how they try and stop us. The hell with the Supreme Court. We will defy them. Women will be in control of their bodies.
The hell with the Supreme Court from Congressman Maxine Waters, showing her respect for one of the three branches of the government that she serves. It is 6:16. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. That's a sense of the tone in Washington yesterday. And there's other news of the week. And again, we will be spending a lot more time with Jim Trusty this morning, our legal expert on the Supreme Court decision. Also, John Gizzi will join us, and we'll have a look back at the original Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. Ronald Reagan was involved in a decision at that time, not the Supreme Court decision, but he was the governor of California. And we'll get into that with John Gizzi. I think you'll be interested to hear how President Reagan, at the time a governor, how he responded at that time. And that's coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We'll talk to KT McFarland later on. She always puts the day's news into perspective for us. We've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up, and we'll be talking with Tony about the latest in Ukraine and some of the gun control legislation decided this week, both from the Supreme Court and from the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate. So it's all coming up here on the Saturday Morning Update. We're at 6:17, and Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the Beltway, just looked at the cameras. It's clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Fairfax County on 66, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. Now to 95 in Virginia. You're not hitting your brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. Lanes are clear both on the northbound side and on the southbound side. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, no delays from Prince George's County or in Montgomery County. In Montgomery County on 270, you're at speed between the Beltway and Frederick, both northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny and hot on this Saturday. High temperatures around 90 degrees. I have a touch of humidity out there, but overall not too oppressive. We head later on this evening into tonight. Lows back into the 60s, near 70 degrees downtown. For your Sunday, even hotter into the lower 90s. Could have the chance for a few isolated afternoon showers and storms, mainly west of I-81. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
67 degrees in the nation's capital. It is 6:18 on a Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update, and there is other news of the week that will impact us all. Of course, inflation, gasoline prices, the political back and forth, the blame game by the Biden administration, that all continued this week. And a very interesting comment from the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. He was on Capitol Hill. He was asked a question about inflation from Senator Bill Hagerty in one of the hearings, and I think this is quite telling.
Would you say that the war in Ukraine is the primary driver of inflation in America?
No, inflation was high before, certainly before the war in Ukraine broke out.
And that kind of shoots holes in the administration's suggestion that it's all Vladimir Putin's fault and all the war's fault. Jerome Powell quite candid there in his testimony on Capitol Hill. Well, kind of an interesting week when it comes to gasoline tax and the gasoline in general. I think you may find this interesting that the key oil executives, over 20 of them, came to Washington for a meeting with the administration. Did they meet with the president? No. They ended up meeting with the Secretary of Energy, and of course that is Jennifer Granholm. And Jennifer Granholm has, I think, been in well over her head for the most part, in her role as the Secretary of Energy, and clearly not doing the greatest job when you look at the gas pump prices these days. Well, she's meeting with the oil executives. So where's the president? Now, wouldn't you think the president of the United States might meet with the oil industry executives in Washington instead of going to Saudi Arabia to meet with a prince he once called a pariah to see if he can squeeze more oil out of Saudi Arabia? So why wasn't he at the meeting with the oil executives? Where was he? Well, he was in another meeting. He was meeting with his offshore wind partners. So he's in his green energy meeting with the offshore wind partners while the Secretary of Energy is meeting with over two dozen energy CEOs and executives. Where does that show you where his priorities are as the gasoline prices still hovering at about $5 a gallon? Now, that's kind of a sense of what's going on. Now, you've heard about the gas tax and Speaker Pelosi talking about the gas tax break.
There's money coming out of the Highway Trust Fund. It's going to the oil companies. They may not give it to the consumer. And it has to be paid for. So we're paying for something to give a break to the oil companies that isn't even going to the consumer. So that's the con. The pro is very showbiz.
Well, I made you look. She said that March 2020, so a little while back when she was talking about gimmicks back in the Trump administration. Now, in the Biden administration, it's a completely different story. She won't say that this week, but Tim Stewart is the CEO of Chevron, and here's how he felt about the gas tax being reduced by the government, what, 18 cents a gallon when you're spending $5 a gallon? 18 cents is going to make a really big difference. Yeah, sure.
Global markets don't respond to gimmicks, and this is the problem with the administration. They don't have it's an unserious solution to a serious problem, and they're just not taking this as it really should.
Well, that's true. Now, Senator John Kennedy, we always like to present Senator John Kennedy because he's able to just lay it all out quite succinctly, quite factually. And he's just a guy that I can relate to the way he views the world. And here's Senator Kennedy on Biden oil policy.
The only way to get gasoline prices lower is to flood this country with oil, our own oil, and guarantee to the industry that if it invests capital to do that, that it will be allowed to get a return on its capital, and that as soon as the crisis is passed, the Biden administration won't try to put them out of business. Mm. Because right now, the Biden administration is trying to put them out of business. The Biden administration has blocked oil and gas leasing in the Gulf, blocked oil and gas leasing in Anwar, sicked the FTC on the industry. It's promulgating new NEPA rules, so you wouldn't be able to build a pipeline in America. And those are all just facts.
So he hit the nail on the head there, Senator John Kennedy, Mississippi. It is 6:24. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It is good to have you along with us. And as I mentioned, we've got John Gizzi coming up, Jim Trustee on the way. Jennifer Harper will take a look at some of the interesting poll numbers as the president tries to blame inflation on everybody and everything. Depending on the day of the week, there's somebody else to blame it on. Well, how do the American people view that? We'll have a poll number there from Jennifer Harper, which I think you will find interesting. KT McFarland, Tony Schaefer also on the way, so stay with us on the Saturday morning update. In the news at 6:30, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down its decision Friday morning overturning the 1973 abortion decision Roe versus Wade. It now allows states to make their own abortion laws. Pro-life and pro-choice activists have taken to the streets in cities across the U.S. to allow their voices to be heard. Pro-life activists showing up in U.S. cities in celebration of the abortion laws that are now or soon will be enacted in a number of GOP-led states. That follows the court's decision, while pro-choice demonstrators protested what they see as an attack on reproductive rights. In Washington, D.C., pro-choice protesters began participating in chants, voicing frustration over the decision, and a flag was burned in Northwest D.C. Stocks rallied on Wall Street Friday, sent the S&P 500 up 3.1%, its best gain in 2 years. The index ending the week 6.4% higher. It erased the brutal loss that it took the week earlier. And a U.S. Army private from Kentucky has pleaded guilty to charges that he plotted to kill members of his unit in an organized attack. Ethan Melzer, entering that plea on Friday in Manhattan federal court. He's 24 from Louisville, Kentucky, scheduled to be sentenced January 6th after he pleaded guilty to trying to murder U.S. military service members. 6:32. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Good morning. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just looked at the cameras. Lanes are clear both in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. In Montgomery County on 270, no delays on the northbound side or on the southbound side between the Beltway and Frederick. Now, in Prince George's County, between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway in 95, you're not hitting your brakes. Lanes are clear. Nothing in the road is going to slow you down there. On Route 50 in Prince George's County, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, you're at speed both eastbound and westbound, and at the Bay Bridge, two lanes headed east and three lanes are coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny and hot on this Saturday. High temperatures around 90 degrees. We'll have a touch of humidity out there, but overall not too oppressive. We head later on this evening into tonight. Lows back into the 60s, near 70 degrees downtown. For your Sunday, even hotter into the lower 90s. Could have the chance for a few isolated afternoon showers and storms, mainly west of I-81. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
67 degrees in the nation's capital. 6:33, the Saturday morning update. Saturday morning update continues. We're joined by Jennifer Harper. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Quite a bit of speculation about the 2024 Republican presidential ticket, and the two top names we're hearing, Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. What are you hearing about the candidates?
Well, what I'm hearing is a lot of discussion about what kind of pair they would make, or if they're going to run separately or not. And it occurred to me, most people would think, oh yeah, well, if they're going to be the team for 2024, it's going to be Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis 2024. And I'm hearing a few little murmurs about what if it's DeSantis Trump 2024, meaning DeSantis as the presidential candidate and Trump as the vice presidential candidate. A lot of people say, oh my gosh, that would never ever happen. But you never know anymore what the heck is going to happen with these strategic pairings that we have to put up with. And so, you know, let's look at a couple of the poll numbers out there. A couple of preliminary things are out there about this new narrative, whether it's DeSantis Trump 2024 or Trump DeSantis, or if they're not going to do anything and it's just going to be Mr. DeSantis, well, whatever. But anyway, this is a University of New Hampshire survey, and it found Mr. DeSantis with 39% support and Mr. Trump with 37% support. So they're kind of running neck and neck there in the Granite State. And another 9% favored former Vice President Mike Pence. So on Thursday, the New York Times grandly announced, New Hampshire poll points to trouble for Trump and growing support for DeSantis. So that's kind of launched a lot of what's going on. And, you know, it would be interesting, though, if the actual GOP ticket emerged as DeSantis-Trump 2024 rather than Trump-DeSantis. And then, you know, half the fun would just be to see what the press would do with all that. They probably, I don't know, in the old school way, they would freak out somehow. But anyway, let's look at a little of the press coverage. Why DeSantis can beat Trump in 2024. Ron DeSantis doesn't need or want Trump's endorsement. That's according to New York Magazine. Let's move on to the New Yorker. A lot of New York publications here. Can Ron DeSantis displace Donald Trump as the GOP's combatant in chief, a fervent opponent of mask mandates and woke ideology? The Florida governor channels the same rage as the former president, but with greater discipline. Now, isn't that fancy? That's from the New Yorker. Let's just do one more. DeSantis closes the gap with Trump in early GOP primary polling. That was from MSNBC. One more real quick. Ron DeSantis follows the Trump playbook ahead of 2024, and that was from CNN. And they've been talking about this for a while because that one was from March 19. That's how long people have been talking about this. But just to throw a monkey wrench in it all, maybe we should be saying DeSantis Trump 2024 rather than reverse.
I wouldn't mention that around Mar-a-Lago. Seems that President Biden never has any problems finding somebody to blame for inflation and gasoline prices. Seems to be a new name every day. How's that going over with the American public and how they feel about it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, across the board with the American public, they're not very happy about this. And this maybe should go to the Oh Dear desk down at the White House because let's look at a little analysis from Election Central. They really track closely all the finer points here. And they're pointing out that even Democrats blame President Biden's policy for inflation. That's coming from Nate Ashworth. He's the founder of electioncentral.com. He says the country has reached a tipping point of frustration with the Biden administration that doesn't seem to be slowing down. Independent voters have peeled away from President Biden over the past year, but now a new trend is sending shockwaves up and down the ballot less than 5 months out from the November midterms. And, of course, we all know that there are going to be some candidates shaking in their boots when that comes around. But anyway, Mr. Ashworth is pointing to a new issues and answers tip poll that now reveal that voters, quote, overwhelmingly blame Mr. Biden's policies directly for the nation's runaway inflation. And he says there's no blame Putin argument that seems to be deflecting criticism. It's all Biden's fault, and the American people know it. And he has looked at the poll himself and said it's not just Republicans and independent voters, but Democrats as well are now blaming Biden for his policies, leading to rampant inflation. And quickly on those numbers, two-thirds of the respondents overall said Mr. Biden was responsible for causing the current inflation. And that finding includes 88% of Republicans, 63% of independents, and drumroll please, Rick, 53% of Democrats. So pretty interesting from our pals over there at Issues and Insights.
Speaking of presidential politics, you got a blast from the past? Got a new gig?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Let's talk about Michael Bloomberg today. We all remember that he did run for the White House, but now, Rick, he has an official role in the Pentagon. This is quite surprising. And, you know, this is former New York mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg, and he did run for president in 2020. Well, things have changed. This is from the Defense Department in a news release which came out on Wednesday. They say Secretary of Defense Lloyd J. Austin III presided today over the swearing-in of Michael R. Bloomberg as chair of the Defense Innovation Board. And everybody's going, well, what's that? But anyway, as the chair of the Defense Innovation Board, Bloomberg will lead a group of renowned experts and leaders from across the nation's innovation base. Not sure what that is either. But anyway, who will provide strategic insights and recommendations on technology and innovation to address the department's highest national security priorities. And, you know, good on Mr. Bloomberg for doing that. They could use some help over there. And, you know, I was wondering how much money he has. So I went over to Forbes to find out. And Mr. Bloomberg, who is 80 years old, he currently is worth $82 billion. That's according to Forbes. He ranks number 12 on the Forbes Current World's Billionaire list, which is identifying the richest people in the world, and number 10 on the richest people in America list. And, you know, he may have the knack that the Pentagon could use, because Forbes cited an undated personal quote from Mr. Bloomberg, and here's what he said. Organizations resist innovation, and those that do inevitably fail because people are more comfortable with what they know than what they don't know. So perhaps that's a new way of thinking for the Pentagon. We'll wait and see on that one.
A lot of attention on Justice Clarence Thomas this week of the Supreme Court, and there's a new book out on the justice?
This is a timely and important book, and it came out on Tuesday, as I said, and it is called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. And this is based on both historical documents and some very exclusive personal interviews that he gave to Michael Peck and Mark Paoletta. And if you're wondering if those names sound familiar, those were the gentlemen who put together a very well-received two-hour documentary film of the same name, which was screened actually nationally in 110 movie theaters. And it was referred to as a marvel of filmmaking by the Washington Post. And this is Created Equal. They did a movie on Clarence Thomas, and they're using an actual dialogue that he said there, along with a lot of historic documents. And, you know, it's just what he actually said, which is really great. And it's probably very helpful at this time. And yes, if you're wondering if Jenny Thomas, the wife of the justice, she is also featured in the book. And, you know, the authors, they got a lot of ability and background. Mr. Peck, he's president of Manifold Productions. He's a writer, director, producer of a lot of award-winning documentaries, et cetera. He also, Rick, was the CEO of the U.S. Agency for Global Media under President Donald Trump, and president and CEO of the Claremont Institute, senior vice president for TV programming at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Oh, how about all that? Anyway, Mr. Paoletta, he was general counsel to the Office of Management and Budget under Mr. Trump from 2018 to 2021, chief counsel and assistant to Vice President Mike Pence up to 2018. He is a veteran lawyer, and he also specializes in representing clients in congressional investigations. Anyway, the new book out Tuesday, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words, and that's coming from Regnery Publishing.
You know, we often hear of crazy prices that are brought at auction. Now, wristwatches, what do we have here?
Well, this was my amusement for a trying week, I suppose. I decided to, as we're all looking at our 401s and everything like that, I decided to look at a rather significant auction staged by Christie's. That's the master auctioneer of New York City. They do lots and lots of auctions of all sorts of things. Anyway, they sent me some of the prices from fine watches, primarily fine wrist watches. They auctioned off 168 of them. And just a couple of prices here, if you're wondering if some people still have money out there. Well, obviously they do. Here's just a couple of samples of what was in this auction. There was a Patek Philippe Nautilus wristwatch, reference 5711-1A101, went for $113,400. A Patek and Philippe perpetual calendar watch, that went for $107,100. A Rolex Daytona, that went for $40,320. Let's go keep on Rolex for a little while. The Rolex Yachtmaster 2 went for $37,800. And one more, the Rolex Submariner Kermit style. And they call it Kermit because it has a bright green thing going around its dial. That went for $20,000. And just as a historic sideline, I had to look up at see what the most expensive watch that was ever auctioned off. Well, that was a stainless steel edition of the Patek Philippe Grandmaster Chime Reference 6300A. That went for, really, $33 million and $649,000. How do you say that? $33,649,000. That was at Christie's auction in Geneva, Switzerland, on November 19th, 2019. And if I mispronounced Patek Philippe, I apologize because I don't own one of those.
You asked how you say that? You say that bonehead. It's stainless steel. It's not even gold. 4th of July holiday around the corner, and inflation is going to be rather explosive this year.
Oh, yeah, you're right about all that exploding mindset there, because inflation's also going to be hitting our fireworks. Oh, Lordy. Well, it's not just the grocery stores. It's the fireworks as well that the price is going up. And, you know, Republicans are always monitoring inflation and tracking the trends for us, which is very helpful. Well, we've got a sudden increase in the price of fireworks, and maybe we're going to get some fireworks out of that. Anyway, this is coming from Kyle Martinson. He's Deputy Director of Rapid Response for the Republican National Committee, and he's shared a report with Inside the Beltway. He said, traveling, gas is set to hit $6 a gallon nationwide by August, while airfares cost nearly 38% more than last year. Booking a hotel, that will cost you 22% more. Grilling, well, meat is up by 12%. Fireworks, expect to pay 25 to 30% more than last summer. Sending the kids to camp, it's so expensive that many parents are skipping it entirely. And, you know, again, as we say, gas is set to hit $6 nationwide, that he said, and that's actually, well, you can see for yourself if you just go to gasbuddy.com. That keeps up on all of that wonderful stuff. But anyway, he says, so why will your summer be so expensive this year? Mr. Martinson asks two words, President Biden. But don't expect Biden to stop blaming others to do his job. He comes up with a new excuse for inflation every month.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Thank you very much, as always.
My pleasure. Everybody have a good weekend.
Thank you very much. It is 6:48. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Coming up next, we will get into the details of the Supreme Court decision and get Jim Trustee's analysis. 7 o'clock hour, we've got John Gizzi coming up. We'll look at the political side of that decision. We'll have some more information from Jim Trustee coming up as well in the 7 o'clock hour. Also, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland. So stick around with us on the Saturday morning update. Maria Leaf will have the 7 o'clock news coming up. But right now, Albie D's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the Beltway, after looking into traffic cameras, I'm here to tell you that I didn't see any crashes or construction. You'll be at speed. In Fairfax County on 66, no delays are being reported eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, if you have cruise control, set that because the lanes are clear between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound and southbound. And finally in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, plus the tunnels and bridges, no crashes or construction. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny and hot on this Saturday. High temperatures around 90 degrees. I have a touch of humidity out there, but overall not too oppressive. We head later on this evening into tonight. Lows back into the 60s, near 70 degrees downtown. For your Sunday, even hotter into the lower 90s. Could have the chance for a few isolated afternoon showers and storms, mainly west of I-81. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
67 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:50 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trustee joins us. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, I know you were very busy doing a number of media appearances yesterday, as after 49 years, Roe versus Wade, no longer the law of the land, overturned by the Supreme Court. And we have seen a meltdown by mainstream media, by leading Democrats across the country. And the question I have, Jim, is exactly what does this decision mandate? I think there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of spin being put out to conjure up Democratic support for November to get the economy and inflation and gasoline prices off the top of people's minds and replace it with an emotional topic, abortion.
So you saw President Biden's speech, too. Look, I think there's a lot of politics that have been, you know, thrown out. And a lot of it, I think, is actually very destructive and reckless in a very emotional situation like this. You know, Justice Alito would probably say, OK, you're right about 49 years of Roe versus Wade as the precedent, but 185 years before that of this country not having a federal jurisprudence that governs the idea of abortion. So I think there's a lot of confusion, maybe sometimes intentionally put out there by politicians when it comes to this opinion. But what's interesting, and I think fundamental to it, is this is an opinion about federalism. It's about states and federal government rights and obligations and authority. And so what's lost on a lot of folks, they almost think it's like a opinion poll of the 9 Supreme Court justices. What do you think about abortion? And they now say they're against it. It's not really it at all. This is a 213-page opinion. It's got a deep amount of history in it as well as philosophical kind of addressing of the issue of stare decisis or precedent. And that's a battle that's been brewing for a while. We've been seeing Supreme Court opinions for like the last 2 years where justices seem to go out of their way to talk about precedent and how much they either respect precedent or don't. And look, stare decisis or precedent is a good concept for this country. We want to have stability when it comes to the law. We want to know what the law is and be able to adapt our either personal or business lives to that law. And so it's a very highly valued principle, but it's not infallible. The Supreme Court, for instance, were the ones that came up with Plessy versus Ferguson, which took even longer to reverse with Brown versus Board of Education. So we've had horrific instances of Supreme Court jurisprudence that, you know, African Americans are worth 3/5 of a white American, or the Japanese internment camps are just fine. And eventually, with the changes of kind of our own mores, the court would revisit that and say, you know what, this, you know, we like the idea of precedence, but this was just wrongly decided. So a big part of the decision yesterday was Justice Alito giving the framework in which the courts have overturned sitting precedent. And so he went through that process. He talked about it. And I think really Justice Kavanaugh's concurrence really captures the issue the best way. In the concurrence, Justice Kavanaugh said, the issue is not the policy or the morality of abortion. The issue before the court is what does the Constitution say about abortion? And the overall opinion, majority opinion, was the Constitution is silent, and it's not one of these ingrained fundamental rights that the Founding Fathers were addressing, so therefore it defaults back to the states. And so we don't end up with a ban of abortion, which was being kind of loosely said by commentators and politicians alike. What we have is a retreat. The federal government no longer is going to control the playing field when it comes to ideas about abortion. It goes to every single state. And to me, that's a very federalist kind of notion, an original intent notion about the Constitution, and it's something that's reserved to the states to deal with. And so we now have these 50 individual laboratories that will all make up their minds with the help of the citizens in each state as to what they want to do with the thorny question of abortion.
California, New York, nothing changes in those states. The Supreme Court isn't changing the law in the majority of the states.
Exactly. What you have is some very quick reaction. You have states that actually have set up triggered laws where they can immediately enact legislation that's already been passed that was kind of dependent on this ruling. And so there'll be some states, I think it was about 13, that will have restrictions or limitations or even outright bans on abortion. But the bluer states, the states that are more in favor of it, Massachusetts, California, Maryland, wherever else, they're free to do whatever they want. So if they want to roll out legislation that is much more expansive, that allows essentially abortion on demand or late-term abortions, if they want to favor travel, they want to set up a system to let people travel to their state for abortions, they're free to do that. It's up to the citizens of that state and to the politicians that are in control. So, you know, it's not to say that the landscape doesn't change. It gets very chaotic when we have 50 laboratories deciding what they want to do, but it's not a ban, and it's not something where the federal court is saying we're going to control what these states decide.
Initial reports were that it was a 5-4 decision. It was actually a 6-3 decision. Where was Justice Roberts in all of this?
Well, Roberts agreed with the ultimate conclusion, so he joined the majority in terms of their ruling. But he wrote separately, wrote a concurrence, and it was kind of interesting. You could see this battle brewing for a long time where Roberts didn't seem as comfortable with outright overturning. You know, he has had considerably more lip service to the issue of stare decisis than some of the other justices. And although Justice Alito was painstaking in explaining when the court is comfortable overturning prior precedent, Justice Roberts tried to navigate a little different way, where you wouldn't expressly overturn Roe versus Wade, but you would attack the underpinning, which is all about this idea of the viability of the fetus. And technology has changed. I mean, 1973, giving birth to a child was different than 2022. And I think the justice realized that it was kind of an unworkable concept to lock in on the end of the second trimester as the point of fetus viability. We've had too many stories of premature children living at an earlier age than that. So he tried to navigate this kind of tricky thing where he could say, I still upheld the precedent, but I'm agreeing with the ruling for Mississippi's law. And he was alone. It kind of fell flat in terms of Alito, Thomas, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. But he, again, reached the same result, just lost out on his reasoning.
Jim, I want to continue the conversation with you. We're going to break for the news. We got John Gizzi, and then we'll be back with you. I want to ask you about the attacks on the institution of the Supreme Court from the highest levels of political leadership, and also the disinformation that's floating around out there. Many of the pundits and liberal media outlets are trying to create an image that next it will be same-sex marriage and interracial marriage will be reversed by the Supreme Court. And I want to ask you about that as well. So if you'll stick around, we'll talk to you again a little after 7:15.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Good. It is 6:58. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Maria Leaf has the 7 o'clock news. We've got John Gizzi back with Jim Trusty and also Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland all in the 7 o'clock hour. Stick around with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.